Hi, everyone. You're listening to In the Open, a podcast by Mental Health America, where we talk all things mental health related.
Hi, guys. It's America. I'm glad to be back with you guys. Thanks for joining us for another session of In the Open. I have Teresa here with me, who's been holding down the ship for the last couple of weeks.
I'm so happy to have you back.
Thanks, man. I miss chatting with you.
I miss you too.
Yeah, man. It's like therapy each week. So I need to be caught up. Today, what we're going to be talking about is how past traumas impact our current relationships. And I thought this topic was very interesting because I've experienced this recently. And in talking with other people, I think we all deal with it, but we don't ever really think about how our past traumas kind of wiggle themselves into the current atmosphere and things that we're trying to get through.
It's a pain that you had. And I totally relate. Even at 40, which scares me, because in mental health, you're always doing comparisons or whatever, but one of the ones that I keep doing, like I do it at 8. I did it at 8 years old, did it at 12 years old, did it at 20 years old, did it 30 years old. It's like, when is it going to end? It's like, when am I going to get my stuff together?
Yeah, man. I was talking to somebody last week and they were like, when did we become adults? And I was like, I never feel like an adult. So I don't. And it has a lot to do with some of the things that, you know, have come up. It is hard, but I only like really sat in this uncomfortable feeling of recognizing that the past crap is still coming up when I encountered a situation in the last few weeks. And I was like, you still are trying to do this? Why can't you do better? Like, that's what I was just like, come on.
I know. Okay, so we should just prepare for ourselves to cry today, because I just know from my own therapy sessions that every time my therapist asks this, I start to cry. So you know what? We're just going to let ourselves go there to this painful thing. Look, I'm going to start crying already.
Okay.
Let's start with you. Tell me what's been going on.
All right. So one, I'd like to say that the caveat in all of this is my understanding and I think my beliefs around what relationships are supposed to look like. And that is formed right by so many things. Like maybe it's by you looking at your parents or the lack of one parent in your home or divorce and things like that. And I'm talking about relationships in terms of a, like an intimate relationship, but this extends into every other aspect of relationships, friendships, everything. Mm-hmm. And what I experienced was I got into an argument with someone. And my reaction was full on anger, like anger, the anger monster we talked about, and rage, like fiery rage. I'm going to spit all this anger at you because you are not being the person that I need you to be right now. And that person's reaction was, you need to calm down. And they were trying to do good. I get that. They were trying to really do good and help me get to a place of calm. But all I wanted to do in that moment was just be like, really spit fire. I'd be like, oh, why can't you freaking get this? And then when I stood back after a day or two, I was like, I was so sad with my emotions and my lack of an ability to stop in the moment and reflect on what was actually happening instead of just being angry. And then I realized I was angry because I was hurt, right?
Yeah.
And I was hurt because I was afraid. And I was only afraid because I've experienced similar situations in the past. And I was like, damn, yo, why can't you get better? Like, why do you have to go back to these bad ways of just functioning?
I'm crying right now just because what you described is why I get into the worst fights with my partners. It's just like the stuff, like I've learned now at 40 that if I have like a really strong emotional reaction, especially rage, that underneath rage is fear.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, I was trapped in a situation and I don't like feeling trapped. So that person comes out that's like, oh, you're gonna trap me. I'm gonna react by lashing out and protecting myself.
Yeah.
Or I react with rage because it just hurts so bad. Like, it's like, mm-hmm. it's that thing, but it's taken so much time to unpack.
Yeah.
What brings the rage? What brings the fear? What's the underlying story I'm telling myself in my head that makes me feel, even at 40, so vulnerable and insecure mm-hmm. that I'm reactive to my husband and that I scream at him and I say things I don't want to say, or I throw something, you know, or like, and you're like, these are not the ways I want to behave.
Yeah. I like all these things went through my head where I was like, this isn't healthy. Like, that's my rational brain, right? It's like, this isn't healthy, America. You have to do better. And then the other side of that, which is like the more animalistic, protective, you know, kind of brain is like, forget that. You got to take care of yourself, you know? Mm-hmm. And the battle that ensues because of that, where I had to think about it. And it really took me time to process and like sit. I was disappointed. That's the word that I use. I was disappointed in my reaction. And I was like, why? What is happening in your brain? And really what it come down to was I was afraid. It's what you're saying, right? Like, I was afraid of what it actually means to trust somebody enough that you allow them to take a very important place in your life and be okay that it's not perfect.
Yeah. So I want to pause because we're going to get through like a really intense working session together. And I just want to tell our audience, like, if you're having relationship problems and you're getting emotionally reactive and you're screaming, that is a red flag. That's like a flag for you to say, hey, there's something about this experience that really taps into a deep hurt. And that's where you gotta, if you wanna recover, it's the journey of life. Like the end, there's no end, because every day you life throws you a new thing to wrestle with. But this is what this looks like. This is what this podcast is about, right? This one episode. It's like just what that ongoing journey looks like.
You know, and I wanna say, like, for our listeners, like, it's not easy to get into this discussion. Like, I know it hurts me to talk about it. And I know it hurts Teresa because, you know, I can see it on her face. And I think she can see it on my face. But I think it's so important to really ask yourself tough questions, which was something that we've always asked of you to go, you know, to really kind of move through this process with us. But
the reason why it's hard is because, I don't know for you, but avoidance is my master skill. That is always what I've done. I just pack it up and I put it aside because I cannot handle it. And this pain that I feel like I'm about to share is something I've learned recently is like the lifelong pain that I've packed up the most.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it makes me cry. But I know that it's good, but it also is hard. It is. You're right to say that and to remind people that it's painful and we're asking you to not avoid. I don't know if you relate to that.
No, completely. Like, you know, one of the sessions that you guys had while I was at was with Karen, and she was talking about, you know, the death of her mom and the fact that she really didn't grieve when that happened and how that trauma still exists, right? And it's kind of like popping up. But I think what that speaks to and what our experiences speak to is the fact that you have to be bold with your willingness to go and seek out the answer so that they don't continue to live like shadows. Because that's what I feel has happened for me, where I'm just like, whatever past hurt you had, that's not relevant to what's happening in this particular situation. Like, it's there, but it's not the same thing.
Okay, so let's take a dive. You said that your hurt was tied to expectations that this person might not show up or might not be what you expect them to be. You use the word perfect.
Yeah.
Like, tell me more.
So I think if people have been listening for a while, they may know this, but if not, so I was married before, I was divorced. And part of that process of being married, then going through a divorce, which is like one of the worst things, is coming to terms with the faults that I had in that relationship and also my ex-husband, right? More so accepting my faults because I can't deal with whatever is going on with him. But what comes out of that relationship for me was that I put myself completely out there and I was like, oh, this is going to be the best thing ever, you know? Mm-hmm. And so every other relationship that I've had past that has been littered with remnants of negative things that happened in that relationship. So when anything like pops up, I'm like, oh, I've been here. So this means this relationship is going to end because there's no good way that this is going to like actually get better. Does that make sense to you, what I'm saying?
Like your bad past experiences shaped the expectations you have of your current relationship.
Yeah.
So what is an example of a thought that is the expectation?
The bad expectation that I have is we get into an argument. That means that the relationship is doomed to fail and it will never be good. And so that means we should break up.
Totally.
So
your brain just goes to the worst case scenario, catastrophizing. Yeah. Like, then we should just leave.
Go.
Yeah.
Sure. Go, because I'm not going to put myself through that again. I've been through it.
But that's the thing. That's yes. The one. I have been through this. I was hurt. I'm not going to let someone hurt me like that again.
Yeah.
Is that what you're afraid of? That's where
the hurt comes from.
Yeah. I don't want to be vulnerable. What are the things that he says or does that triggers you? Is it just fighting at all, or are there specific kinds of things that he might say that really triggers that?
I don't think it's specific things. It's more, and this is why my brain is messed up, right? It's like overarching ideas. Like, we're not having a good 2 weeks, so our relationship is going to suck for the rest of our lives. And I'm like, you cannot equate 2 weeks with the rest of your life or the rest of the month, you know? It's messed up how my brain will automatically do that. And to save myself from any future hurt where I – and you know, I've gone to therapy for all this crap or whatever. And my therapist has been like, you automatically have your backpack on to walk out the door at any time. When are you going to actually like put your backpack down and stay? And I'm like, what do you mean? I got, you know, and so that's the place of hurt that I come from, and putting myself in that vulnerable state to be like, yeah.
I really relate to that. And maybe because the way that trauma affects you is really about feeling scared, like being hurt again, right? That's such a common thing. And I always talk to my clients, or I have this vision of like, I was hurt. So I created like a castle, and it's super like thick walls, man. I'm like, and I sit in this castle and I'm like super by myself, but I'm happy because I'm safe. Mm-hmm. But then over time, like after I feel safe, I realize, oh man, I'm freaking alone. Mm-hmm. But then you like let a brick down so you can like peek out, or maybe someone can join you. But the second they like hurt you, it's so easy to put that brick back up and be like, nope.
Completely.
Back in, right? And so like what was so painful was that like it's not uncommon for people to have multiple traumas. And like in my life, I took care of the biggest one first, which was experiencing sexual violence. And it was always like so big because it's there's something about particular kinds of violence that just assault you and your safety. So like spent a lot of time working through like that as part of my work in therapy, and like breaking down walls, which allowed me to have relationships and be healthy-ish. I'm still totally getting fights, right? But the recently, we've been fighting about whether we're good parents, whether I'm a good wife or a good husband or a good partner. And we're realizing that some of these arguments actually go back before those events. They go back to when I was a baby or a kid, a little kid. And what I'm realizing now and what my husband is realizing is that, like, some of the ways that we saw our parents and the way we were treated, like, this is so hard for me to talk about. Because it's like the pain that I never even thought about, you know, was that, like, my parents were poor and they just had to work, like, all the time. Like, they were focused on that. So they couldn't pay attention to me. I was the last child of the family. I was a mistake. Like, my mom told me that all the time. She was like, I never wanted to be pregnant with you. But one of the things that keeps coming up in therapy lately is, like, do I matter? The reason why I don't fight for a raise, the reason why I don't talk up with friends is because deep down inside, I wonder if I'm important at all. Maybe I don't matter at all. Maybe nothing that I say is important.
I totally get that.
And then I'm just like crying because I'm like, man, why is that thought so painful? Like, that's so stupid. Like, you totally realize it's irrational because you're like, I have friends. They care about me. I have a job. I do things. And then I feel ashamed. Like, I shouldn't have this thought. Like, you shouldn't think that you're not worthwhile or, like, you don't matter. But I do. And it affects my life. It affects why I choose to share information with my friends or not share. And it affects why I get so defensive with my husband about certain things. Like, if I think that he's saying that I don't matter because he's not paying attention to me, or he's not giving me space or listening to me, or if he's questioning if I'm a good mom, I'm starting to realize, like, oh my God, all of this ties to that. And you're like, oh, I just want to go punch something. Because I'm mad that I'm still there.
Yo, I completely get that. Because the other day, I have never felt this way in such a visceral way that I had the other day. Where I wanted to, like, throw dishes and break stuff and be like, this is not good, you know? Because that was the only way that I thought I could show and, like, get rid of that anger. But I get it. Like, the notion that you're not worthy stems from all of that, right? And it's like the core, you know, when you start thinking about all the crap that we live through, it just makes you ask additional questions, like what you're doing, like, why do I have to feel that way? And then the self-doubt. Then you start questioning, well, no, I do have all these things, but it doesn't matter because I still feel like I don't have any freaking worth in anything that I do.
Yeah. And every kind of trauma does that in different layers. That's why the stupid thing about, see, like, cognitive behavioral therapy is sometimes it's so, you can't just toss it to one thought. Because even the question of, am I worthy? It's like, am I worthy enough that somebody will like me? Am I worthy enough that I can be a good girlfriend or boyfriend? Am I broken? Like, can I even have a healthy relationship? All the way down to, like, actually, nobody wants to hear your thoughts. No one wants to be your friend. You don't matter to anyone.
You know, I don't know if you caught this or not, but we did an Instagram Live with Dr. Cesar Cruz, who talked about intergenerational wisdom. And the whole idea is, like, that you tap into these spaces where people that have come before you help support you, right, through your toughest moments. And they just kind of walk with you in thought and spirit. And what it makes me think about is when you're talking about this trauma and this sadness, it makes you question your self-worth, right? That's what's happening. And if you don't have anybody that says to you, even if you do have somebody that says to you, I love you, you are worthy, your immediate reaction, and this is speaking on my part, is to be like, nah, right now that's what you think, but in 2 days' time you're not going to think that. So I might as well just let you go because it's not worth it.
Oh, so true.
You know.
Totally. That voice is always constantly feeding that doubt that...
God, yeah.
Because life is kind of cruel. You have enough incidences where things have let you down or things have been painful and people who should have loved you really hurt you. Mm-hmm. That it makes you be like, well, if that person didn't even love me. And that's what sucks about like expectations, right? Like,
what makes me take kind of pause around all of this is it's like a learned behavior, right? Our ability, like as a collective, to be able to ask questions of ourselves that say, what's happening right now? What has happened before that is making you react in this way? And I think too often we don't do that because of how much it really does hurt to dig into these areas of, like, I'm going to call them caves, you know, the caves of crap that's happened to us. And because if we go in there, it's dark and it's scary and you're normally alone. And even if you have somebody like that's going to have a light out at the end of the tunnel, it's still freaking scary being in there and having to wade through that darkness and be like, I'm so afraid of what I'm going to find here because it's like so freaking scary that I have to confront it.
I think we're kind of naturally moving to the next steps though, right? Because it is so painful, but this painful process is the only thing that will make it better. I had to do this with my husband as part of a relationship for us to take the next steps to even have a relationship. Because for the last 5 years, we have been having escalating horrible fights, like doing things that I said before we got married that I never wanted to do these things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, and you just push the bar. You're like, you make excuses. You're like, oh, I said I would never do this in a fight. And all of a sudden you're doing it and you're like, okay. And then you're like, oh, this is the recipe for what a really destructive relationship could be like, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I see it and I'm just like, oh, this is how this happens for couples who ultimately have what you call like, oh, really like interpersonal violence, or like, I see the red flags. I see that if I didn't have the freaking 40 years of therapy to put a cap on it, that we could go there. But like, so I've been like telling my husband forever, like, we need to go to therapy. I'm like super worried that if we don't go to therapy, this is going to get worse. And what he was hearing was, if we go to therapy, it means our relationship is doomed and you want to get a divorce. So for like a year and a half, we had to fight that battle. And finally, I was like, I don't want to divorce you. I just need to go to therapy because I see the red flags and that I see that like something is happening in my brain where I'm falling into traps and it's preventative. And he was like, oh, okay. You know, so clearly he was bringing his own expectations.
Yeah.
And catastrophic thinking to the mix. But let's talk about then you live through the pain and the purpose though is to get to the other side.
Before we do that, I want to say something around these relationships. Like, we're talking about like our intimate relationships, but I think it's also important to think about how like the relationships that you have, like with your parents or with friends, they all have very similar aspects to them, right? Where let's say you have like a very good friend and they, for whatever reason, have done something that upsets you. And your reaction is like, well, forget you. I'm going to cut you off. I'm never going to see you again.
Oh, totally.
And that's fine. You know, you can do that. But if you continue to repeat that cycle, then there's something that's going on. I remember having a person who I used to work with a long time ago, their friendships, every once in a while, they would be like, they would make a new friend. 2 months later, they're no longer friends. And it would like, it was a cycle. It was like, the only common denominator in whatever you're describing is you. It doesn't matter the person. You're the one that's ending the friendship, you know?
Yeah.
So then it begs you to question what's happening. Like, it's not the fact that all of these people have something wrong with them, which they could have. But in this particular situation, it was the person's inability to accept their mistakes and a willingness to apologize for them.
It absolutely affects all relationships. Even in shadows, like you said, little things. Like, even if I don't have a close relationship with this person, it has affected who I am. So I bring that to the table in a relationship, work relationships, everything, mm-hmm. right? But yeah, close friendship relationships are the same as a romantic relationship. The romantic relationship is just the hardest because you spend the most time with that person. If I took my best friend and I lived with them and I shared a bathroom with them, the same crap would happen with that best friend. It doesn't matter. It's about time, because you all trauma needs is time to unwield its stupid head to show you how it's brought to the table of your life.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I realized, man, I actually don't talk to my friends. Like, I don't really tell them what I'm thinking. I don't tell them about my life. And I used to think maybe it was because I was shy. And then I went to like, oh, I'm an introvert. I've become more of an introvert as I've grown up. And then lately I've been like, oh, damn. It's because I literally don't know if they think or if I think I have anything valuable to share. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what? Am I an introvert or do I just like hate myself?
Yeah.
You know, like some version of hating myself or just like not giving myself the opportunity to be with people because I don't think that I'm like a good friend or like a good person that anybody would want to be in a relationship with. And that's just mind boggling. I'm like, oh my God, that's what it is. It's not even about introvert or extroversion or about being shy. It is literally because maybe I was trained since I was a little kid to think I just needed to be quiet and move aside because nobody has time for you.
You know what though, Teresa, and what you're saying is it's this idea around coming to terms with that, but it's not like you came to that realization by yourself, right? Like nobody teaches you are worthy. It's not like here are the ABCs, you're going to learn them. And it's more about we love you. And the things that happen when you don't hear that enough or you're not held enough. So there's so many areas that I think we just need more education on as people to be able to say, this is why. Because we need to find an answer in some way. Do you know what I mean? Like you have to pinpoint it to then be like, oh, that's what's happening here.
And it's not my parents' fault. Like, that's no, a stupid not. Thing about, like, when you I say trauma, like, yes, this was a this is a trauma. Trauma to me is not, like, some big event that hurt. It's like, no, you had experiences and they shape the way you see the world and they shape the way that you react to other people and the way you process information. And, like, I don't blame my parents, man. They were trying to do the best they could. It's just that the reality of those experiences led me to believe. And it's true. What you said is like, I could have a lot of experiences in my life that tells me people care, people love you, you're worthwhile. But it isn't until I change my behavior, like I speak up and I share about my experiences and I see that when I share, these are the things I get in return. Or if I look at it like, oh, you don't share, you're actually robbing myself. Like, I have robbed myself my whole life of having connected emotional relationships. I have them with other people because I give people time. I give them listening. I give them love. I give them compliments. What I don't do is I don't let other people do that for me.
Yeah, you don't receive.
I've robbed myself my whole life of being able to obtain love. And the sickness of my family is that we also had this story that we told ourselves and each other that if you worked hard and you just put your head down, you were quiet and you just did this, that that made you a strong person because you were a survivor.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn, dude, like that's so screwed up. I'm like, oh, this thing that I thought was a strength this whole time was actually like basically keeping me alone in that stupid castle.
And everything that I've seen, right? Like in all the stuff that I've read and all this stuff, like a lot of the self-help stuff and the real positive kind of thinking stuff is like, it feels good to see like something that says, open your window and count the stars. I'm actually reading something that's in front of me, okay? But our brains have been made to think that in different ways. Like what you're saying, strength equals you keeping your head down and just functioning is strength. You talking about your feelings and letting that out is weak and dumb and you're going to die. We've been trained in that thought pattern. And when other people tell us, no, you should talk about your feelings, or, and I'm talking about myself because this is work, the immediate reaction is like, talk about my feelings. Nope. Disregard. Move on. And you're going to, because it's really hard, right? So it's like a continuous kind of cycle when it's okay to not be okay. Let's talk about it. Everything's going to be fine. But when we've been totally ingrained in a way of thought that says, no, you can't, you have to unlearn that behavior and allow yourself to feel the bad feelings. I'm going to call them bad, but they're actually really good because you're feeling them, right? To then get to a place of like, damn.
Hard feelings.
This is the stuff. Yes.
That are good.
This is the stuff that has been holding me back.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's where I feel we're at. Like you and me, like we're moving in that space where we're like, we got to dig in, man.
And then practice, learn the new behavior. That's where I'm at. Like,
man, learning new behavior.
It's so hard to learn new behaviors because like, you know, you talked about positive psychology and I realized this is why I hate it because I'm like, oh, open the window and smell the freaking butterflies. I'm like, you don't deserve those butterflies. You don't deserve that air. Choke on that air.
Yeah.
You know, and like that's the inner voice basically in the background constantly, like, and like it just didn't resonate, you know, because I can't even accept that positivity in my life. And it's not that easy. It's not easy to be just like, oh, you know, smell the roses, like you'll feel better. And I feel like so much of positive psychology is trying to tell you that, but without, if I cannot unpack and hold myself in the grief and let myself cry, or I didn't even know it was an issue. Damn it. I'm 40. Like I knew it was an issue. Like it comes up sometimes and like, oh, there's that thing, but I'm going to put you back on the shelf because I don't want to talk about it. And now in my life, I'm like, let's talk about it. And now I'm ugly crying with my coworker.
No, but you know what? What's cracking me up is like, you keep going to this notion. I'm 40. I don't care. I'm 40. That doesn't mean I know anything. Like, that's what I feel like. I know nothing. I don't know anything. I'm just trying to live, you know?
But that's the inner dialogue that is the shame dialogue. This is the version of that person in my head that's like, oh, you should have had your stuff together. What, from what expectation? Like, should I have been 12 when I got? And sometimes I look at myself, I'm like, oh, I dealt with that when I was 8. Like, that's really hardcore. An 8-year-old shouldn't have to deal with that stuff. You know, it's just like, oh, yeah. And I don't know what it is about society or something that has expectations. Like, we're supposed to be grown up.
God, man.
I'm supposed to have my crap together by X time. When am I supposed to be recovery? Like this recovery? Like, oh, there's a cure. Like, oh, you're supposed to get better. But it's not getting better. It keeps coming back. And then when we say, oh, maybe it never ends, you're like, ah, that sucks. Because I want it to end. But you're like, okay, that's not the right frame. It's about everything does get better. I am better today. Shoot, it was so painful. I'm better today than I was a week ago, 2 weeks ago, a year ago. I am. The better looks like I fight less with my husband. I recognize that I'm reactive, but now I see where it is. The better for me looks like I have started to ask for things I want. And I can say it's okay to want things. Hey, it's okay to want things. What are all the things you want? This is the hardest thing for me because I feel like I want things all the time and I just buy them. Like I go on Amazon and I buy them. But that's different from say there's something that feels different.
Those are material wants. They're not the wants that truly make a difference in your functioning. You've talked about a couple of things, though, that I think really are important where you're saying, for instance, you've now gotten to a place where, one, you can identify what better looks like. And I think too often our brain plays the old record, right? And it's like, nope, nothing's different. Nothing's different. And if it like repeats a song, right, I'm going with that record. I hope people know what records are, but. You know, but it like you repeat the song and you're like, wait. And then if you hear that song again and you have the same reaction, then you're like, hold up, man. I've never heard it in this way. And somebody's like, wait, did you hear the trumpet in that? And you're like, what? There's a trumpet? You know, and like this idea that you have to, somebody has to help you, whether it's yourself learning about something or somebody's coming and trying to pull you out of that to be like, look at it differently. And what one of the ways that you've identified is thinking about what does better look like?
Yeah.
That's really important. And it's not just for like a romantic relationship. It's any relationship, anything. What does better look like? And you deciding what that is.
And accepting it and allowing yourself to give yourself that experience. Because I think that's the specific thing about traumatic experiences or trauma or hurt. Being when you are hurt by things around you, people around you, experiences around you, the story that you tell, that those experiences tell you that you're not worthwhile, that you don't deserve these things. To untrain yourself to believe that you are worthwhile and this is what worthwhile looks like is actually so hard, because you realize, like, not only did that affect that event happened, you took it on and like you carried it on like a badge. Yeah. Like you just took it with you in your whole life. And that's part of what's painful at 40 years old, where I'm like grieving about it, is because I'm going back and I'm realizing, and I did this with a lot of trauma, where I'm like, oh, freak, you know, this is how I carried that experience. And I turned to alcohol or sex or anger, or now what I consider neglect, or just like just utter denial of human connection, is like I've been punishing myself because of these experiences. And that's hard too, because you're like, ah, like a whole lifetime of ways that I've just robbed myself from living.
Where my brain goes automatically, though, is that you, when you're going through this process, it's so easy to fall back on the behaviors that you've been leaning on for 40 years, right? Totally. They've worked to keep you in
safe.
Yes, safe. This is
the thing, right? They work to keep you safe. If I'm safe, then no one can hurt me. Yeah. But if no one hurts you, are you living life?
Yeah.
If you don't let Fed hurt you, then are you even in a relationship? If yeah. I don't share my thoughts, am I even really in a relationship with him? No, I'm here. My body is present. My mind is not present. And he feels this. He's like, you're cold. And I'm like, at first I was like, you're cold. I'm not cold. I'm a hardworking person. Like, whatever. You're needy. These are the labels we put on it, right?
Yeah, I use that word a lot.
And I was like, that's so stupid. Like, oh my gosh. It's not just that I'm cold. It's I'm scared. I'm scared to let him in. I'm scared to let myself let him in. And he senses that. That's the mental health problem. That's kind of part of the challenge. And he has his own person too, like in this relationship. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, wow. Like we're both here physically, but we're not here if I don't let myself be there.
When I think about the work that I've done with other like families and adolescents and stuff, one of the things that I think comes up is that too often we are just functioning in this place where we're functioning. We're just existing. Surviving. Yeah. And we're not actually living and interacting with one another, where, you know, I get it. Like you can have really tough days and all that stuff, but then you get into this place of, if tough days are happening for a year and you're just existing, then is that really healthy? And like what you were talking about, like, if you're describing like a year's time, I've asked myself those similar questions. It's like, what are you doing to do better? A week by week, right? And the only way I gauge that is by our conversations. You know, to be like, yes, I've actually tried not to get angry. And you know, through therapy too, right? Where you're like, therapist, like, why don't you try this? And when you try to implement, you're like, maybe it worked, maybe it didn't, but you're still trying to make a change. It's exhausting. It's exhausting trying to do better.
It is exhausting because it is so easier to go back to that castle. It's so much easier to go back to what I know, which is how to protect myself. I know how to protect myself. I don't know how to live. That's why I always hated that word thrive. Like, people are like, thrive. I feel like that gets thrown out. I don't know, thrive? Am I thriving? I don't even know what that looks like. I'm breathing right now, okay? And I feel like I'm pretty lucky. I feel pretty good that I ate a meal today and took a shower.
That's a very good point. Like, am I living up to the standards of thriving?
I'm a gross person that likes Netflix. I'm eat and sneak hot Cheetos. And what does thriving look like for me? Like, honestly, thriving for me looks like today I shared information with my husband and I allowed myself to feel love. That's so hard to say. Remember when we started the podcast and I was like, oh, I'm learning how to love myself. I think I knew back then that that's what this meant and that like I needed to unpack that and accept love. But man, it is the hardest thing to do.
I accept love, but I only accept it in the way that I think I'm supposed to receive it. That's, I think, my difficulty, where my expectation of what love is supposed to look like is different.
Or the love that you're comfortable with accepting.
Yeah.
Versus the love that you should deserve, but you don't even... Because it's not even like what the other person does. It's how do I receive it?
Yes. Oh, God. You know, that speaks to like the love languages, yo. If you haven't read that book, you can even find things on YouTube. Go check out the 5 love languages. Because they speak to so many issues around relationships.
I know the concept of the love languages, but the love languages talks about behaviors. And then it talks about whether you give love that way and receive love. But the concept of receiving love is so much more complex. Because not only do I have to acknowledge what you've done is a show of love, mm-hmm. it's how do I let what you've done influence how I feel as a valued and good person in the world. And that's runs right up against trauma, because I literally can't receive love if even when you give me what you're doing, I basically chop block it like a ninja, like, no,
right,
you don't love me, I'm gonna escape. I see what you've done and I intellectually accept that what you've done is good, but I will not let what you've done mean that what we're creating here is really amazing and beautiful, because when you show your true colors and we get a divorce, I can be like, yep, I called it all along. I knew it. I knew you were gonna betray me like everything else.
What I was thinking about the love languages, like I've read it and you know like have thought about it, and what's very interesting about the notion of it, it speaks to what you've said. Like, it's not just about you receiving or you giving, but it's also in helping you as a person identify what you want. How you were saying, for example, if you feel like you're not worthy, right? And that extends into like your professional life. So you're in a meeting and you're not going to speak up because you're like, nobody's going to want to hear from me. I have nothing good to say. It's whatever, you know, and you start questioning yourself. But if you have somebody that's there to support you through that process and be like, hey, Teresa, actually, you had a really good thought about it. Even if you have the self-doubt and you're like, what? You'll be like, oh, damn, I got to say something now. So you say it.
Yeah.
And the face that you're putting on is the face that I know that I've seen on you, where you're like, oh, my God, I'm going to grin and bear it. And I'm just going to tell people what I'm thinking and see if anything comes of it.
And then immediately deconstruct everything I said and pick it apart and tell myself why that was the stupidest thing I ever contributed. And then I'm going to be mad at America for making me talk.
But the rest of the crew is like, whoa, mind blown. We hadn't heard about that, Teresa. You know, and so it speaks to also you increasing your capacity to learn about your ability to ask for what you want in the way that you will receive it and be receptive to it.
Yes. you're using words and I'm only just barely understanding the layers. Like, this is not a new theme for me. I dealt with it at 12. I dealt with it at 21, 22. I dealt with it at 30, and now I'm 40. So the theme continues over and over and over, just with like a new layer of the way that it's impacted my life. You know, that was painful this last time because I really felt like I did a lot of work when I was in my 30s. Mm-hmm.
And you're like, really?
We're back here?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like life's and universe's way of being like humbling you. And you're like, you think you got it all together? You think you can live life now? You want to think you can live life now? Here we go.
Yeah. Like, I went for a long drive the other day. That's something that's like a self-care thing where I just get on the road and I just drive with no real direction, but it just helped me feel better and helps me think. And I remember during that process, I'm like, why are you acting like this? You are taking it to so many levels right now, you know? And I was like, what we're talking about is this idea of trying to do better. And I know we've talked about it before, but within the theme of trauma, I think you get to a point where the trauma bubbles up so often that it becomes part of your visceral reaction. And we're trying to get to a place where that trauma is not the first thing you go to.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's horrible.
I know.
Because I spent my whole life with the trauma being the first thing I go to. It's just so comforting and it keeps you safe. That's the problem with safety, you know? When something isn't feeling safe, our human instinct is to survive. So I think those things that like in your brain, and I think of the circuitry and you're like, boop, 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 you're like, safety first. Like, it's really hard to undo safety.
Yeah, it speaks to something that I was watching yesterday. Sonia Renee. Do you know Sonia Renee? I don't know if you follow her. Mm-hmm. But she was speaking to the reactionary brain, right? Where as soon as you react, whatever else is coming out of the person's mouth, you're not capturing because you're already like, bloop, the moment's come. And you're just like, your body and your brain automatically comes into this place of defensiveness. I'm going to protect myself. I'm going to shut down and boom. And then you miss out on the good stuff that could be coming because your brain has already been shut off.
Yeah, totally. Those are all the ways that these experiences rob us.
Okay, people. I hope that you come back next week. And we'll be here and you continue to fight in the open. That's what we're pushing for.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.
Keep on fighting
in the open.